Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month. Hey everyone, Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com, we've done your homework. Hey everybody, this is Chuck. Welcome to Saturday Selects. Hope you had your Pop-Tarts and your breakfast cereal and you watched your morning cartoons, because now it's time to learn a little something. I'm going to pick Was There a Real King Arthur from January 14, 2014 as my select pick this week. You know I love my history podcasts and all the episodes we do about history, and one of my favorite things is to take a look at these figures from literature and lore and think, wow, were they real people? Is there a basis in reality, in fact? And that's what we did with King Arthur. So I hope you dig it. I certainly did. And here we go. Was there a real King Arthur?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. Jerry waved, everybody. Quiet, Jerry. That's Stuff You Should Know.
Yeah.
That's us.
That is us.
The legend.
You know, it was impossible for me to research this without only thinking of two things. Two movies.
Clive Owen.
Nope. Didn't see that one.
It was good.
Was that the one called King Arthur?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was a good?
I thought so.
I'll check it out because I dig this character. And I've seen a lot of the movies that tackle Camelot.
Mm-hmm.
But Excalibur,
mm-hmm,
and Monty Python and the Holy Grail, of course.
I've seen Excalibur because I had Showtime when I was a kid.
It was a big, hot movie when you were 12.
Right.
In the early 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Holy Grail. I mean,
yeah.
How do you not see that?
It's the holy grail of right. comedies, some say.
Yeah, I could see that.
You should check out Excalibur. It actually holds up pretty well.
Does it?
Yeah, and it's is somewhat notable for having a couple of early appearances by actors that went on to be much bigger.
Oh, like, yeah, I love movies like that.
Yeah, Gabriel Byrne is in it, and mm-hmm, just barely, and Liam Neeson.
Oh, really?
And I think both of them, it was their first roles.
Wow.
And they're like hardly in the movie.
Who played King Arthur? Was it anybody like I've heard of, or
man,
like
I can't remember.
They had to have been big at the time, right?
Who was it?
Richard Burton.
You know, when I was like 13, I saw Richard Harris do Camelot
at
the Fox Theater in Atlanta.
So is that like
pretty neat, huh?
Is that based on the Arthurian legend?
What, the musical Camelot?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
But I mean, you know, it's a musical.
Yeah, and it's from the 60s, so you can never tell. Like, it could have just been named Camelot. That's what I was asking.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's about the Arthurian legend.
But out of all of them, I would say, hands down, Monty Python and the Holy Grail is the best of the Arthurian legend movie adaptations.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in years, but it's like one of those that I saw so many times, I can still quote most of it, you know?
I mean, it has it all. It has the killer rabbits. The killer bunnies.
Yeah.
It has the coconut carrying swallows.
Yeah.
It has the knights who say knee.
Yeah.
It has the black knight who merely has a flesh wound.
Yeah.
It has everything.
Got it, has singing, dancing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
The great Graham Chapman as Arthur.
Yeah. And Bring Out Your Dead.
Yeah. So many things that are in the lexicon.
All came from that movie.
Yeah. Nigel Terry played Arthur in the Excalibur movie.
I don't know who he is.
You'd probably recognize him. Helen Mirren was Morgana, though.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, small roles. Oh, Patrick Stewart was the other guy.
Gotcha.
He played...
Was he bald? Has he always, always been bald? One of those.
I'm sure he had hair at some point.
Oh, I'll bet he looked weird with hair. I can't imagine him with hair.
What if he was born with like a full head of hair? Right. And that was it. He started losing it after that.
Right, for 2 days, and then it all came out.
All right, so anyway, sorry to disrupt us early on, but those two movies, every time I saw Uther Pendragon...
Which is a cool name.
It was a great name. I couldn't help but just kind of say those lines in my head.
So, I mean, you make a good, or you raise a good point. There's so many Arthur movies out there.
Sure.
Arthur books. Sword in the Stone was pretty good, too.
Yeah.
That everybody has a kind of a basic idea of... the King Arthur legend, mm-hmm. the Arthurian myth, or romance it's sometimes called too.
Sure.
But what I think probably a lot of people don't know is that it is a syncretized, meaning the Catholics got their mitts on it mm-hmm. and threw a bunch of Christianity on top of something that was already extant. And in this case, what was extant was a group of myths that arose from the Celts, the Celtic people, mm-hmm. which is pretty substantial that we have this because the Celts never wrote anything down, mainly on account of the fact that they didn't have a written language. Their tradition was entirely oral, which is why we have very little of an understanding of the Celts. Most of our understanding of the Celts comes from outside observers like Pliny the Elder. Thank God for Pliny.
Yeah.
Or else we might not even know the Celts ever existed.
Yeah.
But the Arthurian legend is very clearly based on Celtic mythology. But even more enticing to me is the idea that it's possible that Celtic legend, that Celtic mythology mm-hmm. is rooted somewhat in fact. Like yeah. Arthur may have been a real person.
Yeah, that's sort of the age-old question.
Yeah, but I mean, I find that in astoundingly fascinating. Like there's places that are part of the Arthurian legend that do exist in real life.
Oh, yeah.
But whether or not they actually were a part of Arthur's life, if there was a real Arthur, mm-hmm. I mean, each spot generates awesome debate.
Yeah.
You know, so for the anthropologist, the history major in me, I'm fascinated by the whole thing.
Agreed, sir.
So let's go over the basic legend of Arthur.
Killer king, legendary hero.
Yeah.
Saved Britain. When Britain needed saving.
Yeah, because the Roman Empire had crumbled.
Yeah.
And the Saxons were all over Britain, the Germanic tribes.
Yeah, and he defeated them.
Yes.
And brought great peace to the land and built a castle, called it Camelot, gathered up knights together around a round table, which we'll get into. And
there's a lot of rounds.
To help bring peace to the land. And
he did.
And he did so very successfully. And in fact, in 2002, the BBC voted King Arthur as number 51 in the poll of 100 greatest Britons.
Yeah.
Even though he might not even be a real dude. And the Britons are smart folks, and they still voted him that.
They're pretty sharp.
Yeah. So those are the broad strokes. But depending on which version you're reading, it's going to be different. Did he pull a sword from a stone? Was it Excalibur? Did he get it from the Lady in the Water? Uh-huh. Was his undoing Mordred? Or was it Guinevere and Lancelot?
Yeah.
Depends on which version you're reading. And we'll go over those versions.
Right. And you can kind of trace these back to, you know, you can see layer after layer being added. So when you look at the Arthurian legend as we understand it now.
Yeah.
You can kind of peel back layer by layer and get to the original stuff.
Yeah.
Which is pretty old indeed. Like they think that, we'll get to that.
Okay.
Let's talk about the Arthur story.
Okay.
So you've got Arthur. He comes along at a time when Britain is in its greatest need. There were some great kings, possibly relatives of Arthur, like Uther Pendragon, his father supposedly would have been one of the rulers.
Yeah.
Right? But you're smiling because you like that name?
All I can think of is, I am Arthur, son of Uther Pendragon.
Okay, yeah. So you just say that anytime you want, man. But he arrives at a time when Britain is being overrun by the Saxons, it's being ruled by the Saxons. Like, there's no British king on the throne.
Yeah.
And there's a legend that comes up that there is a sword in a stone, and only the rightful king, meaning only the line of Uther Pendragon.
Yep. I'm not going to say it again.
will be able to remove the sword from the stone. And when that person comes, he will be dubbed the King of Kings and will restore the rightful lineage to the British throne.
Yeah. And in some stories, like I said, a young man, a young Arthur, pulls the sword.
It's a sword.
From the swan. Right. And in other legends, it does come from the Lady in the Lake. He rides out on a barge and the hand stretches up with the sword in it. All you see is the arm
right.
coming from the water. And he gets the sword that away.
Well, and then in I think a third way, he pulls the sword from the stone, proclaiming himself Arthur.
Yeah, and everyone goes nuts.
The ruler of Britain.
Everyone's like, he's the dude.
Right, like we got one of our own back in power now.
Yeah.
And then that sword breaks, and that's when he gets Excalibur from the Lady of the Lake.
That's right, the most powerful magic sword in all the land.
It's what you call a bitchin' sword.
It is a bitchin' sword. Merlin, in some stories, comes around right about this time. And he appears when Arthur is a teen, generally, associated with the Lady of the Lake there in Avalon. They're both from the same neck of the woods,
which,
apparently.
Avalon is a magical mystery place,
yeah.
even outside of the Arthurian legend. As far as the Celts go, it was a. It means apple land.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And I guess apples were super magical to the Celts. But Avalon itself is almost an otherworldly, afterlife-y kind of area, even though it's a physical place you can go to in Britain.
Right.
Still.
Interesting. It's interesting that the apple has always been a strange fruit.
Yeah.
Like, I know it probably wasn't an apple in Eden, but it's all in...
I wonder.
Southern Baptists called it an apple.
Yeah, and I wonder what it was originally in, like, Aramaic. And then when it was converted to apple. Because
I don't know.
Where's the apple indigenous?
I don't know. Or the apple in what was the children's? Was it not Snow White? Was it Snow White? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, with the poison apple.
Poison apple again.
Yeah.
I saw a video today that we've been eating apples wrong. Did you know that?
I've seen that. I can't bring myself to eat an apple like that. There's a middle spindle, aka the core, that is not to be consumed.
That is not true.
I won't do it. It's just too weird.
But you can eat the core. There is no core.
There is a core. I create the core every. I show it just like a sculptor reveals the sculpture within a slab of stone.
Uh-huh.
So too do I reveal the core in an apple.
Let me ask you this: if you cut the apple up into the 8 pieces and get the seeds out, you can just eat. That's the whole apple.
No, you have to shave off like that inner part. The core.
For those of you who don't know, there's a video of a dude eating an apple from the bottom end forward, and he just eats the whole thing.
Because he's a psychopath.
Okay. Sorry to get sidetracked by the history of the apple.
I think you do raise a really, really interesting point, Chuck. I wonder, you know, when the apple started getting a bad rep, when the apple stood in for other fruit.
Yeah.
I think that's an excellent thing to look up.
Okay.
To let me know what you find.
All right. So Arthur, like I said, he builds Camelot. That's his castle.
Once he restores peace.
Yeah. Well, no.
Oh, no?
No, I think that was, he went out and got all the knights to help him restore peace.
Oh, okay. So he built Camelot in anticipation of restoring peace.
Exactly. And recruited knights for the round table. And we might as well go ahead and leak that. The round table was supposedly round because we're all equals and there's no head of a round table.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And it was either fashioned by Merlin.
Yeah.
Or it was a gift from Guinevere, who we haven't gotten to yet, a wedding present from Guinevere's father.
Yeah.
Even though he got it from Arthur's father, Uther Pendragon.
Yeah. And her father was King Leo de Grance, who I think that was Patrick Stewart.
Gotcha.
In Excalibur. So the knights go out. They defeat all the outsiders there. Peace reigns. And that's why Camelot... to this day has the connotation of, and especially with the Kennedys, like this, you know, like peaceful, idyllic situation.
Right.
That's Camelot, although it was a place. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
It sort of represents more than a place.
Right.
It represents the peace that he brought.
Yes.
With these knights. Okay. Then he meets Guinevere.
Yeah.
Falls in love with this little hottie. And then, depending on what story you read, there might have been an affair with Lancelot or Mordred, who was either his nephew or, depending on what you read, or his son.
Which technically he could be both, because supposedly he had Mordred with his half-sister, Morgana.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Who is translated into Morgan Le Fay, who's like this kind of enchanting, temptress, evil woman.
Yeah.
Who helps Mordred try to take over Camelot, tries to take over the throne. And Arthur says, "Nay, to you, we will do battle at a place called Camlann."
That's right.
And that
Mordred
is,
dies.
That's where Mordred is killed and Arthur is wounded. And depending on the version of the story, Arthur's either mortally wounded or just kind of wounded. But either way, he gives his sword, Excalibur, to Bedivere and says, "You need to return this to the Lady in the Lake." After kind of waffling, because Bedivere's like, "I could use Excalibur."
Yeah.
He finally gives, he throws Excalibur to the lake and this arm comes up and goes, "Ching," and like catches it and then goes back down. And he's like, "There was a Lady of the Lake."
Yeah, that's the Excalibur movie version.
Okay.
They follow that version.
Okay.
Because I remember distinctly him chunking the sword out there and the arm coming up.
That's cool.
It is very cool.
I have some vague mental memory of that as well.
Sure.
And then Arthur's taken to Avalon to either die and be buried, which is or he recuperates and hangs out there to come back to reign over Britain in its next time of greatest need,
right?
Which is why Arthur is frequently referred to, and there is a book titled "The Once and Future King,"
because
he will return again when Britain needs him, makes him like kind of the British Superman.
Yeah. Before we go any further, my friend, I think it's a good time for a message break. Stuff you should
know. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey, now we're back.
So that's the basic legend. I mean, like, we just basically condensed thousands of pages of different books and thousands, well, not thousands, but hundreds of years of folklore into a few minutes, but you get the gist of it.
Sure, you know the story.
And if this ignited your fancy and you're like, I want to know more, man, you could dedicate the rest of your life to researching and reading Arthurian legend.
Some have.
Because there's tons of it.
Yeah.
And it's all, like we said, it's a literary tradition, but it's rooted in an oral tradition among the Celts, the pagan Celts. But this literary tradition itself is really, really old. A mention of Arthur is from, I think, the 5th century, right? The 5th century Welsh poem?
6th.
6th century Welsh poem.
But when you're off by 100 years.
Back then?
Yeah, ain't no big deal.
Especially with a man who may or may not have existed.
Yeah, true.
But Arthur pops up in one line in this Welsh poem called the Gododdin?
Gododdin.
Gododdin.
Yeah.
It's a great word. And this poem eulogizes the Welsh warriors.
Maybe Britain's oldest poem.
Yeah. Because the Celts would have started to have become Christianized around this time.
Yeah.
Hence, things would have started to have been written down. So this poem would have popped up really right around that cusp between the end of purely Celtic culture.
Yeah.
Because the British Isles were the last stronghold of the Celts, which swept all the way to Asia. Like, they covered Europe, parts of North Africa. The Celts were everywhere. But it was the British Isles that were the last holdouts until about like the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th centuries when they became Christianized.
All right, so they're Christianized at this point?
By the time this poem came out, the very fact that there's a written poem shows you that the Christians have made their way in this area.
And the Celts are off just telling stories, licking their wounds and telling stories still.
Right.
Not writing stuff down.
They're like, are you familiar with mistletoe?
Yeah.
Do you know about knocking on wood?
Look at you, utilizing all your information. Some other references in literature. The Historia Britonum, History of Britain, AD 800, and the Annales Cambriae, the Annals of Wales, a few hundred years after that. They were basically history books, the main history books of Britain and Wales.
Right.
And but they themselves were just compilations of other books and can't be like factually verified.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, they were used and Arthur was mentioned in both. The Arthur we know and love today, you can trace back to Geoffrey of Monmouth. And he was a priest who wrote Historia Regum Britanniae, the History of British Kings, in the 1100s. But he based his stuff on the Historia Britonum, but it just became really popular.
Right.
So, like, he kind of based it on the other thing.
Well, I mean,
and some people even say he plagiarized, but it became so popular, he was kind of golden.
Right.
Like, and he was great.
I think also he, most histories are based on previous histories.
Sure.
So that in and of itself isn't a bad thing. But yeah, I don't know what this article is implying that, like, that he stole work or he fabricated it.
Well, he was accused of fabricating some of it, so.
So, well, either way, he gave the world the Arthurian legend.
That's right.
Like, Arthur existed before this, like, as we've seen, but he was the one that said, like, there's a great story here, and I'm going to bulk this up.
Yeah,
and so then, he started naming places.
Yeah.
He started contemporizing things. Like, he took this legend and put it into a context that the people who lived in his time would understand and be fascinated by.
Yeah, and he introduced Christianity for the first time to the story. The French got a hold of it, and they're all about a good romance novel. So they sort of introduced the love elements, or not introduced, but emphasized the love elements a little bit more.
Yeah, about 50 years after Geoffrey of Monmouth made his history, Christian de Troyes came up with some stories that added that romantic part.
Yeah.
And a lot, like I think the Grail stuff too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he was the one who came up with the romance between Lancelot and Guinevere.
Yeah.
And the Grail, the search for the Grail, which wasn't a part of the story up until the 12th century.
And most of the stuff had been like history books and poems. Starting with the Vulgate cycle, or prose Lancelot, is when you started getting these great prose stories. And Christianity is woven in even more.
Mm-hmm.
And this is between 1210 and 1230.
Right.
just to give you an idea of where we are.
And they don't know if these stories were like maybe part of a popular literary trend at the time.
Right.
So where a bunch of people were writing them.
Yeah, like chivalry was a big thing to write about.
And, right.
Yeah.
Or if it was one author writing a series of stuff and they were not, they're not attributed to any single author, but they're collected together as a body of work, the Vulgate cycle.
Yeah.
And those ones focus a little more on like Lancelot and the chivalrous knights and all that.
Yeah, and the Grail too.
With Galahad.
Yeah, they said that Joseph of Arimathea, who was in the Bible, he was the one who gave Jesus his tomb after Jesus was crucified and brought back. And he said, no, he didn't say that, but they said Joseph of Arimathea brought the Grail to Britain. But then Galahad, Sir Lancelot's illegitimate son, was said in the Vulgate cycle that he discovered the Grail because he was pure, of course.
Yes.
Until he went to the castle of Anthrax. Remember that scene? And the pure and chaste goes to the castle and there's all the ladies that are like tempting him. Yeah. And it's Michael Palin. Yeah. It's just like wide-eyed.
That's such a great movie, man.
And then the big one, that most of our modern stories are based on is Thomas Malory's Le Morte d'Arthur, The Death of Arthur. And I read this in college.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. And it was tough. It was sort of like a bit of a modernized Middle English.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite Chaucer. It wasn't that tough. But it was still a tough read. And I remember thinking at the time, can I just watch Excalibur? And it turns out I could, because that movie was specifically based on The Death of Arthur.
Right.
Yeah.
And so as you're kind of seeing like each new century, each new author is adding their own thing to it.
Yeah, he didn't actually write it. I should say that. He compiled the stories together.
Oh, okay. Surely he cleaned them up and...
Well, yeah, but he didn't create a new work.
Gotcha.
It's known as a compilation.
Well, he did add some new stories about some other knights, Sir Gareth and Sir Tristan. He also kind of took the focus off of the Celtic pagan mythology and really focused it onto the Christian mythology.
Yeah.
And at this point, the idea that this whole thing is based on Celtic ideals and myths is lost largely to history.
Yeah.
I mean, at the very least, it doesn't become nearly as apparent. Was he the one that added The Lady in the Lake, though? Oh, no, that was the Vulgate cycle.
Yeah.
Which is surprising to me, because I would think that would be ancient Celtic mythology, but that wasn't added until the 13th century.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, The Lady in the Lake and the idea of Mordred as Arthur's son by his sister. You'd think those two would be real old.
Yeah.
No. It was part of the preoccupation of the weirdos in the 13th century.
Well, I think Malory did add the, after Guinevere and Lancelot are busted, they go their separate ways to become a nun and a monk.
Oh, yeah.
Respectively.
Right. So after Malory, you have Alfred Lord Tennyson, who wrote The Idylls of the King.
Yeah, that creepy looking dude.
And great poet, though.
Yeah, but scary looking.
And I love his name, too.
Yeah.
And then T.H. White wrote The Once and Future King, and that was the basis of The Sword in the Stone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little Disney action.
That was a good movie, if I remember correctly.
And yeah, it was good.
Merlin was kind of like a kooky. I mean, he was weird, right?
In that story?
Yeah, in The Sword in the Stone.
I don't remember that one that much. Was that the animated?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, where he's like a young King Arthur who pulls the sword from the stone. And
I didn't see that. I must have seen it, but I was all about the Jungle Book.
Yeah, this came out about the same time.
I know, but I was probably so obsessed with the Jungle Book.
Same exact animators and everything, yeah. You're like, I can't pay attention to this.
All right, so...
I got Mowgli to lend my fascination to.
All right, so we should talk a little bit about the real ties to real history and whether these people were real or these places are real.
Uh-huh.
So let's get to that after this message break. Stuff you should know.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get.
I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Okay, buddy, so what's the deal? Was there a Camelot? Was there an Arthur? Were these knights real dudes?
Probably.
All right, should we just end it?
Well, so take Merlin, for example.
Okay.
He seems probably the least likely to have existed because he is a magician, a sorcerer.
A magical wizard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A wizard. That's a great word.
Actually, is he a wizard or is he just a magician?
So, well, I mean, come on. The two are fairly interchangeable.
Oh, you just wait, my friend. There'll be some LARPers emailing.
Oh, right, yeah.
It is not nearly the same, sir.
Well, let me explain to you the difference between a cleric and a mage. He was apparently based on one or two people that really did exist, and both of them were holy men. They would have been druids. At least one of them would have been druids.
Yeah.
He was, one was named Merdin Wilt.
Yeah.
And another one was named Emrys Wledig.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. Wledig.
Well, there's two vowels in both of those names combined.
Right.
You know?
It's just, yeah. It's almost like Russian.
It's tough to read.
And both of them lived in the late 6th century. And one was the first one, Merdin.
Yeah.
He was this wild man who went into war and saw too much and like went crazy and fled into the jungle.
I've seen too much?
Yeah.
Wow.
Apparently he suffered from some sort of PTSD
huh.
and went and fled into the jungle. Well, not the jungle because this is a British Isles,
yeah.
but the woods, we'll call them.
Yeah.
And lived as a wild man for many years. And he was apparently a famous local, like magic wild man. The other one, Emrys, was like a full on straight up druid. He was like a prophet and advisor, and he definitely lived. So they think that possibly one of them was Merlin or folklore combined the two together and made him Merlin.
I think that's what most of this stuff is.
Yeah.
Possibly based on real people, add a dash of this and a dash of that and mix it up and you come up with a literary figure. That's just my take.
Yeah.
Camelot, supposedly, if you read the Historia Regum Britanniae, he wrote that it was Cornwall at Tintingale Castle. And they've actually found a stone there in the 1980s, with an inscription that said, descendant of Arthur, father of a descendant of Cole. In Monmouth, actually, the writer of that history book names King Cole, as in merry old soul was he, that mm-hmm. same King Cole, as one of Arthur's ancestors. But there's a little bit of a rub because that castle was built in the early 1100s.
So
many hundreds of years later after Arthur was supposedly living.
Right. And the author of this article accuses Joffrey of basically using Tintagel castle as a way to please his patron, who had a cousin that lived there at the time.
Yeah.
But the some archaeological excavations have found that this Tintagel area was settled from at least 300 AD and was definitely in full swing, was a trading post basically, and a fortified castle around the time when Arthur would have been conceived. So it actually is archaeologically possible that this was a place where he was born. At the very least, if there was a real Arthur and he was born in the time frame that we're talking about, Tintagel Castle was settled and in full operation in that area.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it wasn't built hundreds of years later?
The castle as it stands now was.
Oh, okay. It could have been a
settlement
different
castle. Was built upon settlement upon settlement. And as they've excavated downward, they found that at that time, yes, there's plenty of.
So that stone could, in fact, be real?
Uh-huh.
Wow. All right. Busted.
Yeah.
Thomas Mallory said Camelot was Winchester Castle. And for many hundreds of years, there was a wooden round table that hung on the wall with all the little names of the knights of the round table there. But Winchester Castle was built in the 11th century, and they carbon dated the table to 1340 and said it was probably painted during the 1500s under King Henry VIII because everyone was way into chivalry in medieval history at that point.
Right.
Are you going to bust that one? Or is that one?
No, that one makes sense.
All right, that is busted. Unbust, I mean.
The Cadbury Castle, the fort that's in Somerset that's mentioned in here too. That one, if anything, was Camelot, it would have been that place.
Oh, yeah? Is that the leading?
Yeah, but it wouldn't have been Arthur's. It would have been one of the rulers that basically handed over Britain to the Saxons that Arthur had to come in and whose mess he had to unmake.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been that ruler's. And there's a 16-foot thick fortress made of timber and stone.
Uh-huh.
That is apparently unique to this castle that's from the 5th century that was written about from that time frame, from that period of time, was supposedly built around that period of time. So you have documentary evidence in the literature, and then you also have the actual physical evidence of this castle that's built in a way that's just unique to it.
Sure.
That supposedly belonged to this guy that Arthur may or may not have come in and taken over.
Uh-huh.
If he were ruling in this area at the time, that would have been the castle that he would have taken over. So,
gotcha. Because it's the most heavily fortified.
Yes. And it was just like a prime castle in the area that he would have been in. So if there was a Camelot, a castle that he ruled from, that probably would have been it.
All right. So you're going... Josh votes for Cadbury Castle in Somerset.
Yes.
Okay. Avalon is supposedly Glastonbury, where they have the music festival now.
Oh, yeah?
I think they have a big music festival there. Mm-hmm. My TV tells me. here's the deal there. There was the Glastonbury Tour, which is a sort of, for England, for that area, it's a mountain.
It's like a hill.
It's a little hill.
Yeah.
Like the Englishman who went up the hill and came down a mountain.
Right.
The Glastonbury Tour was had the ruins of St. Michael's, which was an abbey built in the 12th century, which replaced an earlier abbey that was burned down. And while they were building the newer abbey, these monks said, you know what? We found graves containing bones. Look at the bones.
Yeah.
Man and a woman. And this is King Arthur because there's a cross there.
Yeah.
And it's inscribed in Latin. And it says it's King Arthur and Guinevere. So there's your proof. Even though the cross doesn't exist anymore, the bones don't exist anymore. They did read the inscription that was supposedly copied verbatim from the monks. And they said, some smart dudes said, no, that's 12th century Latin, my friend, not 6th century Latin.
Yeah.
You silly people.
Yeah.
So I guess there's a difference and they knew. So that was quashed. Or are you about to debust that?
Debusting that.
Sweet.
So Glastonbury Tor, this conical hill, used to be an island. And at the top of it is Glastonbury Abbey, which was built in the 12th century.
Yeah.
But was built on the ruins of an earlier one. So that thing actually did happen. It did burn down. Apparently in the 1980s, they excavated and found a pair of 6th century graves. Stone-lined graves. The bones are gone. There's no markers or anything like that.
Yeah.
But they would have been the kind of graves, and they were dated to Arthur's era.
Okay. So that
If furthermore, yes, furthermore, there was evidence that these graves were disturbed in the 13th century, in the 1200s, or is it the 12th century? Sorry, that they were disturbed in the 12th century. So there's evidence that these graves are from the 6th century and that these 12th century monks did find them and open them up.
Yeah.
So whether or not they were Arthur and Guinevere, or if this cross ever existed and what it said, it still remains to be proven.
Sure.
But, I mean, it's very possible that these monks were just trying to drum up patronage to rebuild their abbey.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're like, hey, we found Arthur.
Yeah.
So they may have forged the cross, but it's still entirely possible that that was Arthur
right.
and Guinevere.
Just because they beefed up the story with the story of a cross doesn't mean that it wasn't truly their final resting place.
Yeah, at the very least, there were a pair of 6th century graves there.
With bones?
No bones.
Oh. Well, where'd the bones go?
I don't know if they moved them in the 12th century or if they just dissolved.
Okay.
I mean, we're talking a while.
Yeah, sure. All right, so is that your vote?
Yeah.
All right. Josh votes for the Glastonbury tour.
Right.
All right.
Which I want to go to. All this makes me want to go to the English countryside and just like find all this stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Yeah.
I like old things, and it's hard to get anything super old in this country, you know?
Yeah. 1600s?
Yeah.
Maybe 1500s if you go down to St. Augustine.
Let's go to Rome. You want to see some old stuff? Go to Rome.
I have.
Yeah,
I have too. It's neat.
It is neat. It's kind of neat to stand there in the Colosseum and think, holy cow.
Yeah.
This is the oldest thing I've ever seen.
That was the one that got me and Yumi was the Colosseum.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, we everywhere else we're like, yeah, this is pretty cool. For something about the Colosseum, I was
pretty blown away too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And boy, the people, man, good looking.
The Romans?
Just all over Italy. The dudes, the chicks, they were all like models.
Yeah, very stylish.
Very stylish. And cats everywhere.
Were there?
Yeah, street cats in Rome. They're known for it.
I don't remember seeing too many cats.
Oh, you saw some cats.
Oh, don't they live in like all of the ruins and everything?
They're everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the Trevi Fountain there. That was something else. That one kind of took my breath away.
Yeah.
We should start a travel show.
We should. I think we just did.
And finally, maybe some of these knights were real dudes. Sir Bedivere, he was one of the earliest knights to appear in the Arthurian legends and one of his right-hand dudes. He has appeared in other writings, historical writings.
That have nothing to do with the Arthurian legend.
Exactly. And he was known as Bedwyr Bedradant, a member of the royal house of Findu, which rose to power in Wales in the 6th century. And then Sir Kay was also possibly a real dude.
Yeah, both of them appear in a Welsh collection of warrior poems called the Mabinogion. Mabinogion. Take your pick.
Yeah.
I'm not Welsh. You're not Welsh, so either one.
We get crap for not pronouncing things right, but this stuff is tough.
Oh, yeah,
when
man.
You've got like 13 letters and one vowel, it's like, what do you do with that?
Yeah.
You know?
And I mean, I'm looking at the alphabet that I recognize.
Yeah.
My brain just won't put it together.
Uh-huh. Agreed. And finally, Arthur himself.
Yeah.
My vote is on a compilation of real people, like I said earlier. Some folks say he might have been a Roman leader named Lucius Artorius Castus, or maybe a Roman named Aurelius Ambrosius.
See, I saw that Aurelius Ambrosius was his uncle, was Uther Pendragon's brother, and Uther and Aurelius had to seize power to start to restore their lineage, and then Arthur followed after that.
Okay, see? Well, I guess it depends on who you're reading, you know?
Yeah.
Some folks say he was a British historian named Alan Wilson, says he was a Welsh king, Arthwys, in the 7th century.
Yeah.
I think everyone wants to claim a piece of it. I think that's what's going on here. You know, I think they're saying, no, he was this Welsh king, or no, he was this Roman king, when I think he might have been all of them.
Well, the idea that he was sent by the Pope to basically restore order or take the British Isles back from the Saxons definitely is lent credence by the idea that he kind of comes out of nowhere and like pulls the sword from the stone and is like, I'm arrived. I'm the king of kings now.
Yeah.
So the idea that he came from somewhere else is, I mean, that would suggest that he could have possibly been some Roman commander.
Yeah.
And there were Roman commanders who did come to Britain and fight the Saxons successfully.
Was one named Arthur?
Yeah. One was named Artorius.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah.
And then some people say that Arthur wasn't a name, but a title, Arth, and which in Latin means bear. And if that's the case, it could just be like, you know, could be anybody.
Yeah. Could be short for Arthur.
Yeah.
Could be bear.
So why does this story persist? Because it's got romance. It's got chivalry.
Mm-hmm.
It's got all the classic elements of drama in literature and fiction. So there you have it.
And plus, Monty Python's take on it doesn't hurt in perpetuating everything.
What kind of a man can summon fire without flint or tinder?
Man, you know that movie inside and out, don't you?
I watched it a lot at one point in my life. Nice. I think that's my favorite part of the movie. The none shall pass, when they have to pass the guy that spits and tells them about the rabbit.
I remember the none shall pass. I don't remember the spitting.
Yeah, when he's talking, he's got a lisp and he's spitting all over everybody.
Yeah. You got anything else?
I got nothing else.
All right. If you want to learn more about King Arthur, you can type in King Arthur in the search bar. We also recommend you go just look up stuff about King Arthur. There's plenty of stuff out there. It's fascinating. Let's see. I said search bar, right?
You did, sir.
Okay. Well, then that means it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this Tribute to My Father for Megan. Josh, Chuck, and Jerry wanted to write to tell you thank you immensely for the show. My dad, Howard, passed away nearly a year ago, and while I don't think he listened before he passed, I think he would have really enjoyed it. He was a tinkerer and loved learning new things. In fact, when I was younger and visited him during the summers, I'd be alone most days at his apartment while he worked, and he would encourage me to search random things on the internet and read about them to learn something new. He would even leave me lists like the planet Jupiter, the state of Wyoming, or the year 1845. I thought at the time it was pretty silly and only did it a few times, but now as an adult, I've since found your podcast a few months ago, and I find it really fascinating, and it reminds me of my dad and has been really helpful to me when I get down about him being gone. It makes me happy to know that he would probably think it's awesome that I spend my days learning about things now. So, Megan from Plano, Texas, thank you for that.
Yeah.
In memory of your father, Howard, I think he would like the show, too.
That's pretty cool.
And I'm sorry he's not around to hear it.
No, but, I mean, we're carrying on his legacy.
Exactly.
Nice.
So I guess we need to do a show on the year 1845. Yeah, or the state of Wyoming.
Never.
Not Wyoming.
Thanks a lot for that, Megan. That was nice of you to share that. If you want to get in touch with me and Chuck to tell us anything you like, you can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@Discovery.com. And you can join us at our super dope home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.